to tell you the end of my story. For all of those who wanted to know, was there life after the pain?
Yes, yes.
After the pain, you come
testing. Yeah, that's on.
Cool.
So Matt, I'm in here in the studio with a good friend of mine and colleague,
Damon Lombard.
Where are you from, Damon?
New Orleans, Louisiana.
What do you do?
I am a middle school teacher in Washington, D.C.
What do you teach?
I teach middle school photography. I teach seventh grade science. I teach something called advisory.
The mythical advisory class. Where are you from?
New Orleans. Home of the Saints. Home of the Pelicans. Home of the Jazz.
Future home of Zion Williamson.
Future home of Zion Williamson. Great answer.
Yeah. And no longer the home of Anthony Davis, possibly in the future?
He's probably on his way out.
They're saying LA or New York. We'll see about that.
Too bad he's missing out.
Do you have any hobbies?
I like to swim. I like to eat. I'm a big fan of food. Your food is outstanding, by the way.
Thank you. We'll get to that. But what about food? Is it a big part of your life?
Oh no, it is life.
It is life. That is
you
true.
Can't live without food, and you can't. It's hard not to crave certain foods. You grow up with certain flavors. You grow up with certain things, and it's wonderful to have it. I love it.
Yeah, what kind of flavors do you grow up with in New Orleans? Are they like reminiscent of anything? Do they bring back memories?
Oh yeah, gumbo is always special during the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Jambalaya. When you always had a family who visited town, they always wanted something like a crawfish bisque, or they certainly wanted gumbo or jambalaya or okra gumbo. There were certain things where you always wanted a gumbo, but that was always special if it's Christmas.
So there's not just one gumbo, right?
Oh, no. I make my, and everyone doesn't make it the same either. My mother...
I just want to clear the record because I feel like people think there's like one type of gumbo.
Oh, no. And based upon... Some people just cook with what's in the fridge and other people go out of their way to go get premium ingredients and tons of them. I remember my grandmother's okra gumbo was eaten with rice and a fork. There was no soup. Which a lot of people think of gumbo as a soup. It was more like you take a fork of okra with sausages and rice, and it was just glorious. But it was not like you think of an okra, like a filet gumbo, which you're thinking of with big shrimp and sausages and rice and this kind of brownish liquid.
Which one do you prefer? Your grandmother's or okra gumbo?
Oh, I love all of it. I didn't have a preference. Sometimes I wanted the okra because I didn't have it as much.
Gotcha.
But when my grandmother made that, have mercy, that was just complete and total joy.
I can imagine. And you said, you have a lot of cooks in your family, you were telling me.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you yourself have the talent, you think?
I am not up to my mother's level, but when put me in the pinch, and I'll sit there and make my pots do some damage.
That's a good expression, actually. Let the pots do all the talking.
And then they can work. They'll talk really well, actually.
So you were telling me earlier, can you remind me what your mom, or your favorite dish your mom used to make for you? Or something special? You mentioned your grandmother's okra gumbo.
Yeah.
Is there something special that your mom used to make, or like a special time of the year where you have like a dish that you would always like?
My mother's gumbo is glorious.
And like, what kind of gumbo is that?
Oh, it's a filet gumbo. Mm-hmm. But it's so full of stuff. I mean, she does not hold back on the shrimp or the oysters or the crabs. And then we have that.
She puts oysters in the gumbo.
Yeah.
I've never had that before.
But then you have oyster dressing, which is also glorious.
What's that?
Oysters, breadcrumbs. I can't remember. Like green onions and stuff like that. And you end up cooking of it.
Oh, see, like you broil the oysters. No.
No. I would have to get the recipe for you and go like, oh, I get it.
So they're just cooked in the oven, like oyster half shell.
Totally different. She actually cut up the onion, the oysters.
Oh, so she shucks them.
They're she doesn't shuck them, you buy them shucked.
Okay, so they're bought shucked.
Yeah.
And then you throw them in the oven with breadcrumbs and...
Mm.
Oh, okay, cool. I thought they're still in the shell.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That'd be hard to chop that.
Yeah.
I mean, your knife would be really messed up by the time you're chopping up that shell. But glorious. My mother makes a killer baked macaroni, too.
Oh, wow.
Like, you sit there and go, gumbo mac and cheese? Like, yeah, gumbo mac and cheese. I mean, not the same time necessarily, but her barbecue shrimp, that was always fun when people came.
I'm a huge fan of barbecue shrimp.
Well, when you go to New Orleans, I got to call my mother, and she's going to need the barbecue shrimp, and you're going to need French bread, of course, to dip the bread into the butter sauce. And you would sit there and wait for your smile muscles to be activated. And you get pain in your smile muscle. And you're like, ouch, they hurt. I need to get away from this table. It's that kind of thing.
But food is such a big part of the culture down in New Orleans, right?
There's no you can't separate food.
I was gonna say.
There's no difference.
I was going to say, because I feel like that's one of, well, I won't say it's one of the few places, but to my knowledge, places I've visited, that's one where, like, it really stands out. Like, they have their own unique, like, this is very unique and, like, absolutely.
Totally.
It is the culture there.
Like, and, yeah, you can't separate it. Mm. I remember growing up, and of course, generations before me, it was like fish on Friday. So, also a Catholic city. So, fish was the Friday meal, but it's also on the water, so people get fish. Beans was the Monday meal. Like, everyone had the same food on the same day every day. I mean, it, and Sunday was kind of the day for the big meal when you had all the stuff.
What did you eat for lunch? Like, what was lunch at school?
No, it was just like any other school. It was really not very interesting. You gonna eat a hamburger? You know,
I didn't know if it was different. I don't know if
tater tots. I mean, like yucky school food was you at yuck. I mean,
and now like these, like the kids we work with, or, yeah, the school we work for, the kids, they just get like,
no, they get gourmet.
Yeah, amazing, amazing food.
We have a salad bar when I was in school. I mean, we have a gourmet salad bar every day.
When I see like salmon, one time this one of my kids made fun of me because I couldn't pronounce. Is it salmon
Nisi Swaz?
I said salmon Nikosis, and she was like, she just laughed at me, and I was like, "What is so funny?" She goes, "It's Nisi Swaz," and I was like, "I don't know what that is."
Look at it this way: we're at a school where you have no clue what they eat for dinner. This would for lunch.
Oh yeah, you're right. I can't even. Yeah.
So I want filet mignon for dinner. They probably say you can get filet mignon.
Very true.
With crab meat on the top. If that's what you want. I don't tend to live in that normal day-to-day dietary desirable space. However, I do come from a line of having good food all the time.
But I think that's like, but that's innately part of like that's like the traditions you were just naming. Like you eat these certain things on Monday, Tuesday,
that
Wednesday, what would be Thursday?
I don't remember. But if I call my mother or my father, say, oh yeah, I mean, obviously you eat that on Friday.
Do they still eat the same way they now?
No. I mean, no. Sadly, a lot of people don't even cook.
Really?
Well, look, it's like anywhere else, people are too busy. And families have moved around, and people don't hang out the same way that they did. And I mean, it's not everywhere, but, and some young people never took time to learn what their mothers, fathers, grandmothers, grandfathers would cook.
Oh, that's a good point you raised. Do you think that's a fault on, like, this generation that they're missing, like, do you think that's an essential life skill? Or do you think that things are so automated now and, like, there's so much convenience that, like, it doesn't really matter whether or not you know how to cook or not?
And it's just like house cleaning. It's not valued the same way. It's not part. Whereas I had chores. I had to clean. And there was also expectation that they're not going to cook for me forever. And at some point, I knew I was going to leave home. I should at least learn some basic cooking skills. I should at least know how to use a knife. I know, don't put the knife towards me. Cut it away from me. I mean, there's certain things that it seems basic, but the kids now don't even want a driver's license. That's all I wanted as a teenager. I can't wait to open up to drive. I can't wait to get a driver's license. I can't wait to drive a car. I can't wait to have permission to use a car. I can't wait to get my own car.
Yeah.
It's the same attitude toward cooking. Some people learn it because they need to eat. Other people do it because they actually like to eat good food. Those are two different approaches, and I think when attitudes are such where I just want to have everything given to me, I would rather just pay for it and let someone else do it. You have, one, let society change on you, and two, you don't have any real connection between the food and culture, where all of a sudden the culture is more of a genetic, homogenized, fast-paced culture where you don't even take time to care.
Hmm. And if you're not connected in the culture, right, so what is it easy, you think, to get lost in, like, the importance of what specific foods are for you? And, like, do you think that goes into, like, maybe a misunderstanding of, like, health and nutrition and, like, a lack of understanding of, like, what your body needs and, like, what your body actually needs versus, like, what it craves and wants?
The problem is people don't want stuff until they want to know. For example, if you're in a paleo diet or you're in this other kind of diet, you don't really pay attention to the health parts until you're interested in knowing. Otherwise, people just go with, I want that, I like that, that milkshake tastes good, I want the milkshake, give me the extra 2 pumps of syrup, please. Like, I mean, because you want it, and it's only until people kind of say, I need it, or I need to change my body, I mean, because I want to, or my health numbers, when I went to the doctor, don't look great, and I need to adjust something. Only then do people make adjustments, or in my case, my uncle got a prostate cancer diagnosis. He started eating brown rice. He started telling me about brown rice. He started saying, eat dark chocolate to lower your sugar number versus milk chocolate. It's like it either you need to change it for you, or you experience something with someone else, and they make adjustments, and they make you aware that maybe you should care. Until you care either about your health or your culture or your society, or some people all of a sudden want to buy the impossible Whopper because it's not made of meat, because they feel that the plants are going to decrease global
warming. There's an article about that. Did you see that?
Well, I gave it to my kids about the impossible Whopper.
Oh, wait, that about what was yours about?
The plant-based meat alternative hamburger.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, fast food restaurants are trying to get these meat alternatives that taste like meat, have texture of meat, kind of have fake blood like meat, in order to change the actual slaughter of animals. So all of a sudden, the slaughter of animals changes the way you eat. But in that case, it's more of a global cultural reason versus your cultural, ethnic, geographical culture, which is different.
Yeah, it's different. But the article I was just saying, they found that recently they did a study. I think they compared, I don't know if they compared just the Impossible Burger and the Beyond Meat Burger.
Yeah.
But they found that the Impossible Burger had, like, I think 13 times the normal amount of, I think, glyphosate. Which is found in weed killer.
Oh!
Yeah, that's not good.
Oh!
So they're kind of doing a recall. No, I don't think you did any. That's like.
I didn't read that one.
You did your due diligence. This happened like maybe this week. Where they did a. Not maybe this week, but like around this time, recently. They did a study and found that. So they're reporting about that. There's been some thoughts that the Impossible Burger wasn't maybe the best. Because of kind of the ingredients they're using, some of the fillers, but.
Well, look at it.
I don't think there's.
When you make food. In a lab, well, you by the definition of a lab is you're going to use chemicals.
Absolutely.
And I think that people are kind of thinking, oh, I'm taking this cabbage or this lettuce and I'm adding stuff to it, coming up with a meat alternative. It's not quite that. But I think some people are so starved for certain kinds of change that all of a sudden they think that commitment is going to lessen, in this case, climate change. It's like, I get that. But I'm not necessarily want to give up my gumbo for an Impossible Whopper.
No, you shouldn't have to.
But
it should be balanced, though.
Yeah, totally. But if you want a mixed culture, I think in that case, it's more of a mass communication, social media, generic, big picture culture, which there's a place for it as long as you don't get rid of that which makes you who you are and your story, and it doesn't erase your story.
Exactly.
I think if it erases my story and say, okay, I don't need gumbo because I have an Impossible Burger, and I don't want to eat sausages anymore because they're all 100% bad. I mean, I think there's some danger in that, too.
Yeah, I think so. I agree with you. I feel like my whole thing is I feel like you can still really embrace your culture, but I think because there's a lack of maybe passed down health education or knowledge about like the things and ingredients you use and like where they're coming from, why they're included, and there's none of that. Like, there's no anthropological lens on like what the actual context of why these dishes are made a certain way. You lose a part of the culture that kind of tells you why you're like why people are eating these certain things and like why this might be good for you or why this might be bad for you, and like then you within your own culture can kind of say like, oh, I really want to use these ingredients, I really want to have these dishes still, and it lets people be more creative and say like, I know I want it to taste like this, and I can find ingredients, I can find a way to like utilize a skill like cooking to like still make the things I really like, but now just like emphasize like the healthiest parts of it or the best nutritional parts of it.
Well, in all fairness, you do have to consider money.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what's available and what's around you. Like, I don't know if I share this with you, how jambalaya came about. Did I share this story with you?
Maybe.
Well, Louisiana was founded by the French, like in this current, it was went all the way to Canada, the West. And I don't remember what when, but the Spanish took over the Louisiana territory. And the Spaniards were known for paella, and which has clams and prawns, which are big shrimp with saffron. And they end up in Louisiana and they say, okay, we have shrimp, but we don't have prawns, and we don't have saffron, but we guys have got a lot of pigs, and we can make sausages. And jambalaya is a Louisiana localized version of people trying to make paella, so oysters instead of clams. So you say, okay, a lot of things come out of what's around you. So you end up creating a whole new cultural dish based upon the region you're in, but its heart was really somewhere else. And they were able to make a sustainable dish because everything is there, and 200 years later, I guess, it's still around. And it is definitely not paella. And it doesn't feel like paella, but it feels very much like a Louisiana dish.
Yeah, it has its own unique kind of flavor to it. And Swiss, yeah. Sounds really good.
Tastes really good, too.
Oh, yeah. Huge fit. But I think, like, going back to it, I think we could, I mean, as educators, I think, I told you I was trying to incorporate this into my next year, but just more health education, like a basic understanding. I think if you build on kind of health education, especially nutrition for this generation, because things are so convenient, I feel like kids end up losing sight of the fact that, like, at our school, some sports, like, it's optional to do sports. You just have to do one sport a year, I think.
I think it's if you're higher level. Can I see you? So middle schoolers, I think, have to do two sports. And
yeah, so like if we have three seasons, in middle school you have to do two out of the three seasons. Yeah. In high school, I believe it's one season of sports. So you can choose to do alternatives and be physically active, but there's no emphasis on like just creating habits, like good, like I guess health habits that way of just like exercising or like taking your mind off of school, out of being social and just like focusing on yourself. There's no real like emphasis on, there's self-development for like your mental health and all these other aspects that we do great in our school, but like in terms of looking at the human as like focusing on yourself, there's no thought about like your own nutrition, like your own health and what that means for you, like how to like mindfully like relax after a long day. Like those things could all be very, very useful and like beneficial for the kids.
I agree, but I'll say this. I watch sixth graders and I watch seventh graders and I watch eighth graders and they're all tremendously different.
Oh, absolutely.
And then you look at ninth graders, and then you look at seniors. They're all so different. They're all changing so much so fast that it's hard to figure out
a structure program.
Yeah, I mean, you have to find out what's appropriate for a sixth grader, what's appropriate for a seventh grader, what's appropriate, and really find a way to weave it in where they don't even have to think about it, but it's woven it into everything that they do. Well, we've woven it through a science class. We've woven it through a sham that they have to take. Where you have this kind of class, which would be, okay, mindfulness is every first Thursday after lunch. And then you have to go to the, okay, we're going to expose you to different types of athletics. Because if you're stuck on a team and you don't like it, and that happens a lot with kids. They join teams, their friends are there, but they really don't like it, and they're not getting a lot of it outside of the social. And I think the social for young people, I think, has a lot of value. But if that's the only value, I don't know if that's good either.
That's true.
I mean, I think if there's nothing wrong with being on the bench.
No.
However, I think it's healthy if you are the coach to try to give them some minutes. To not feel like I'm just here wearing a uniform and I don't play at all. I don't think that's healthy either.
No.
And if that's the case, then you don't need to necessarily have all these people on the team. You're a smaller team. You let them create a team where they can play.
At that point, right?
Yeah. At that point, you're just sitting there making kids upset. That was the kid who played high school basketball, scored 1 point my whole career because I never got in the game. And we had a terrible team. Now, I come from the mindset if your team is bad, then everybody should certainly play.
Yeah. That's only fair.
I mean, if you're going to get blown out, you might as well play.
Yeah.
And sometimes when I think about the soccer team, I said, yeah, 39.
I don't know how you do it, but...
And sometimes I think the only way, if you want anyone to play, is to do like hockey, where you would shift, it's like, you four going in, or you three going in, where it's like, okay, you're the back line. Back line switch. I mean...
Yeah.
But the problem is, there's so much individuality in the game, that's hard to teach a different, what do you call it, foosball?
Yeah, foosball.
It's like it's hard to think of it where I'm coaching foosball style soccer. Because there is a lot of individuality, but I would have to coach it like I'm coaching foosball.
And then they don't really ever learn the game because that's just so different than like how the normal game is.
The normal game is never like that.
Yeah, you get like three subs maximum at like the highest levels.
What do you mean middle school and you have 39 over choice? Like,
no, there's no
or way. Only so few kids are going to play. I mean,
well, that would be the ideal situation. I think in general, like, that's a part I would say of at least our school, where they do a really good job of, or schools in general, they do a good job of trying to get kids to be active in that kind of means.
Yeah.
But there's no, like, I still think there could be more done to like emphasize like just overall, especially nutritional health for kids. Like we had, like we were saying, we have gourmet meals at lunch.
Yep.
Self-serve. There's also like a lot of wastefulness that happens too.
Tons of it.
Yeah. So I was talking to Marcus, who works at our school. He's one of the staff, and he was telling me that, you know, we were talking about like how the kids waste a lot.
Yep.
And he was like, you know, a farmer told me one time, like, don't even think about like you wasting money. Just think about the fact that I have to wake up at like 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning and pick all of this stuff.
Right.
Gather all of it, and like, you know, that there's no thought. It goes into the same way how the school's left a mess. The kids are very, like...
Well, I look at a few things. One, we're in a privileged space.
True.
Which is one thing. Two, if you don't know how to respect it and really say, I don't believe in waste, before you take your food, you're going to take less. Especially knowing that you have the option to go back. Mm-hmm. And... if you do have extra, you can get a container, a to-go container, save it for later. You don't have to throw it away. And if that is part of, in this case, that type of culture, where waste is okay, and we never make a statement to the whole community, waste shouldn't be okay, or if you're going to waste it, we have certain containers around where you dump the food and we're going to compost.
I was just thinking that, yeah.
Which, you say, okay, if you can't keep people from wasting it, at least take those food scraps and allow them to be used. Otherwise, it is waste. And if you'd like to reduce waste, but if you can use it, then you say, okay, at least it's being used. You just hope they don't keep taking too much just so they can put it in the scrap heap so it could turn it into something else. But if that's a way to manage it, okay. I know I live two blocks in the farmer's market on Saturday, and you can go there and bring your food scraps.
Just compost, yep.
They will collect it. You take your bag, you dump your bag into the contents, into the plastic thing. You take your bag home, I guess you rinse it out if you want, and they reuse it. So if we were committed to that, then you say, all right, I don't like the waste, but at least we have a plan that would be better than just tossing in the trash can. Again, I hate to throw in the trash can, but we would have to be more proactive on the end of, dear students, please don't waste this food. Dear students, there are a lot of hungry people in the world. Dear students, farmers, spent a lot of time picking this food, growing this food, and then you look at the floods in the Midwest, you may not get this food in a year.
People were pushed off their land by these larger corporations just to make the food,
of course we could do that in our classrooms too, but we only have so many months in the year and we have certain content to cover. So sometimes even it's not always easy to weave it. I think in some cases those type of real life things I get for homework.
Yeah.
Where you say, okay, I know I need to cover this, but I want to cover that, and this is my way of covering that. That's the extra stuff for homework. And if they don't read it, they're going to not make any points on the quiz. But you hope that the point of making it a bonus question is the fact that you see the value in them reading it. And if they didn't read it, they're not necessarily penalized, but they don't get the benefit. And I'm more interested that they get the benefit of learning the big picture story than just worrying about a score. I mean, sadly, you have to give them a teaser, teaser, but in my mind, dealing with young people, I want them to really appreciate all of it.
Yeah, I think something I would aim to do is try and teach resourcefulness as well.
Yeah.
Because I always look at it, I know, I kind of keep trying to circle back to this, but if I think about the way, say you have a composter, say you only have a certain amount of things in your pantry, how do we teach people how to reuse things in a more functional way? How do we teach our kids more resourcefulness so they're not worried about overbuying, overpurchasing? They can save money, but they learn how to reuse what they have, right? If you buy a kombucha bottle, are you throwing away that glass bottle and recycling it, or can you reuse that to do other things?
Well,
can you break down some of those products that you have to
sometimes use for other? I think sometimes we would have to do it at first.
Model it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because really, if we just do it, then they'll see it. And they're learning because they see it without you saying it. But sometimes they don't want to hear stuff from us. Sometimes kids, you just do it and let their curiosity take over. Say, what's that? I say, oh, by the way, this is a blah, 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 blah. And this is why I do it. Okay. Sometimes showing them and not teaching them opens up their question mark. And it's the question marks that create the openness. And it's the openness that allows the stuff to go in. Because oftentimes, if you just sit there and let them ask what and why, then all of a sudden, that means you really want to know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the problem that we have sometimes is they really don't want to know. They really don't care. But sometimes, you give them a little tease. Okay, look, put it away. What's that? Oh, you want to know now? Well, let me tell you that. And it's the same thing with nutrition. It's the same thing. Well, what is that you're eating? We had to bring something in. And why do you eat that? Okay, I eat it because I'm training for fill in the blank, and I think this would be a good way.
That's a really good way to think about it, yeah.
I mean, sometimes you have to teach them but not teaching it to
them. Yeah. I just worry, I hear how they talk and they sound so, I teach 6th grade, Damon teaches 7th grade.
Yeah.
And then you teach some of the 6th graders as well in art, and I think some of the 8th grade as well.
I do.
So I just hear how these young kids, 12 and up, just talk about what they're consuming in terms of just products, technology, at all times, and I just worry that they're losing a sense of resourcefulness and
No, they're not losing it.
Could just be the group that we're working with, and it could just be that.
I don't think they lost it, but they never gained it. Because they grew up with screens around them. And if even the screens were some of their babysitters. Sure. It's you're a baby here, sticking for your face. That's your pacifier. And in the end, that's kind of the lens in which they look to the world. So the idea of recycling a bottle is something for us to have to expose them to. Because a lot of them have not been exposed to these other things. It's hey, in Connecticut, you need to pay 10 cents to get that bottle, and they'll give you 10 cents back. You mean they actually charge you for that? Huh? When I grew up and you got your Coca-Cola in a glass bottle, they would charge you and you brought it back, they give it back to you. That was normal. And I lived in Texas, home of Dr. Pepper. People wanted to go get the original Dr. Pepper and wait right outside of Waco.
Are you a Dr. Pepper fan?
No. But I wanted to go to the Dr. Pepper place because you brought the bottle. You can watch them fill it up and they'll cap it. And that was like a big deal. I really wanted to go. I mean, that would have been for real.
Yeah.
Can you imagine you go to the place where Dr. Pepper started and people would go to these markets,
uh-huh.
like secondhand, like, what do you call it? Like flea market?
Yeah.
Looking for Dr. Pepper bottles.
So they can go.
They clean out the bottle and they can go to right outside of Waco.
That is 100% not worth it.
That's 100% worth it.
Not worth
it. I would
it.
Have, 100%. And I am not a Dr. Pepper person, but I would have gone to get that bottle just to go to Dr. Pepper. Yes.
Oh, just to see them do it, yeah, but not for Dr. Pepper. I'm not a... Yeah.
Wait, but apparently the original doesn't taste like the one you get.
What does the original taste? So to me, adding 23 flavors...
I'm sorry, it's called the Dublin Dr. Pepper.
The Dublin Dr. Pepper?
I think it's Dublin, Texas.
Dublin, Texas?
I think it's called...
Dublin Dr. Pepper, so double D Dr. Pepper.
I think that's where it is. Outside of Waco.
That sounds about right. I don't know. 23 flavors of anything together just doesn't sound appealing. Especially in like a soda.
Try the original and then say it.
Because so you don't like the normal everyday brand, but you like the original?
I don't know, I didn't get a chance to go.
Oh, so you've never done this before?
No.
Is it on your bucket list?
No, but I live in Fort Worth, and I really wanted to do it. So, I'm sorry, and if I get back to Fort Worth, I'm going to go to...
If I ever find a bottle, I'll give it to you.
Please.
Can't you just slap on, like, a Coca-Cola bottle?
No,
and then,
put,
like,
no.
Put a logo on it? No?
Certainly not.
You think they'd be able to tell the difference?
No. Yes.
I don't know, but it's interesting. I just think, like, how much, consumption these kids go through, and, like... Just, I try to teach them sustainability and like practice it, like just get their mind thinking about like how you can be innovative and thinking about ways you can not only help like your community and like your like just your own personal life and be more sustainable, because it's hard to kind of think so like global as a kid, like oh if I do this one thing everyone will stop doing it. No, but if you start with yourself maybe you can convince others that there's a change that's possible.
Yeah, totally.
And it's just like
that.
It's just making their relationship with like the things that they do just more, yeah, just more mindful. I think like that's the biggest thing I try to teach it, like just being more mindful of yourself and the world that you're in.
I think it's a good way to start.
Yeah, especially at a young age, instead of just focusing on small things. But next year, hopefully, like teaching them gastronomy through like science through gastronomy will be really cool, and just kind of focusing on the health parts. And just focusing on the health parts and the aspects of like what the effects of like these certain like foods actually do for your body, like have them do like a daily log, like what are the things you're eating, all right, like now that you know what you're eating on a daily basis, like what is that doing for your body, what does that do for you?
Well, I think that the challenge is for a young person,
mm-hmm.
they have to be interested in knowing, well, what might this do?
What's the bad? What bad could happen?
What's the good? What's the bad? Why does it matter? And in some cases, you might say, okay, I remember doing the family history
mm-hmm.
thing where you say, okay, I've got bad hearts in this part of the family. You might have cancer in this part of the family. And you say, okay, based upon my family history, I need to be mindful of that. Or if I have diabetes in my family, I do need to pay attention to the sugar. Or do I always overload on pasta?
Yes.
Because if that's the case, I do need to be careful. Because even though I might be a preteen or a teenager, it could sneak up on me. You don't want to have pre-diabetes or inflated numbers and that are not to your advantage, because once you get older you may not have the same physical activity, which you better manage it as a younger person, especially if you have sports in your life, the regular, if you eat right and you have the habit of eating right and exercising well, then you can manage this thing that could happen to you. May not, but could.
Yeah. I think it's important.
But I think when you do the young person, they need that other context, that other layer of, this is why I need to pay attention. But if we just gave it to them in the first day of school, make a log what you eat, I think that would be helpful if we're teaching them food groups, and then this as much protein and cholesterol and fats and different types of fats, and say this is why it's important to know it. I think if we were doing it as a teaching tool, then they would pay attention too. But would they pay attention out after the assignment is over? I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's honestly the ultimate goal, right? That's why we teach.
Yeah.
So hopefully that they remember something after the school's over.
Totally. But I think that would have to be the link to keep them would be, I need to pay attention for my family history mm-hmm. of health, or as a performance agent for, okay, I'm on a cross country. Maybe I shouldn't be eating that. I might need more of this than that. Salad is cool, but pasta is better if I'm going to run 10 miles.
Oh, and yeah, we're so clueless. I can't tell you how many times I feel really nauseous at practice. What did you eat for lunch? I didn't have any lunch.
Right.
Or,
right.
I don't really feel so good. What did you have? I think I had beef soup like right before practice started.
Right.
What? Like, why would you eat that right
before? Or you got the kids who can't eat because they're on a certain medicine.
Yeah, and that's a whole different...
And that's a different thing, too, but sometimes you need to be reminded that you really need to try to eat something, even though you don't
really
want
try.
To.
Yeah. Then it affects... There's so many other things it affects, mental kind of, like, cognition and how, like, awake or energized they are for class and, you know, are alert, rather, and just, you know, their whole... It can change their mood, right? You see people who are on diets, they start diets, they go through mood swings, because, like...
Yes, because they don't have all that nutrition.
No, but then they don't know what to give themselves, which I think, like, at a young age, a foundational kind of understanding of what could be good for you, what, like, theoretically could be good for you, what could be bad, kind of don't tell them what is good for you, what is bad, but say, like, let's discuss, like, what do you think the good things are, what are the bad things are, might give them more context to say, like, here, take this for the future, you kind of have an idea of what could be good for you, what could be bad for you, you're going to think about it more now when you look at those choices.
My concern... Particularly for the girl, is that they look at all these images.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what they think they need to look like. And then they might make choices of really not to eat,
mm-hmm.
or eat the wrong stuff. Or, I can't eat anything fat. Like, no, you need fats.
Yeah.
Fats are important for you. Like, some kids want to hear, so and so on the paleo diet. Do you know what that means? Uh-huh. Do you know what they eat? You know why they eat it. What are the pros and the cons?
Yep.
Or you're a vegan, that's fine, but there are pros and cons if you're not mindful of it.
Yep.
It's like you gotta get your protein.
Yeah. I think for girls and boys, like even growing up playing soccer, like I was lucky enough to have my grandmother live with me, so I had, you know, at least one nice square meal a day.
Yeah.
Where I could look forward to my grandmother's like home cooking.
Mm-hmm.
So I was a chunky kid. And like playing soccer, like that used to create so many like body image issues for me as a chunky kid.
Yeah.
I was like, I don't look like any pro soccer player that's playing right now, but I have like the talent to keep up with like all of my friends. But like I don't look like any of them, so I feel like there's something I'm doing wrong, and I don't know how to fix it. So I always say like from the lens of like looking back, if I had just when I got to college, I learned more about nutrition, food, like performance.
Yeah.
And like it started to make sense. I was like, like if I want to perform like this, like how I was playing, then like I need to eat these things. Or if I wanted to like have these results, I needed to eat these things or like follow these kinds of like lifestyle habits. And that's how I was like, I feel like from an early age, if you just have like, because like if you depended on your parents to teach you about nutrition.
Oh, no. But I don't know,
Yeah, because it wasn't enforced for them. So I feel like breaking the cycle a bit might help.
Well, there's another thing. Like just say I looked at Hazard.
Mm-hmm.
Left Chelsea.
Yep. 150 million or something like that.
Well, I'm referring to they showed a picture of him at age 16 And then you look at him, I think, at 18, and you look at him when he won his first team championship, and you say, my goodness, same guy, he's not that big of a guy. But he doesn't look like the same person. And that's another factor that when you do it with young people, it's hard to imagine that your body is constantly changing. You are changing. Which in his case, he had a better chef in his life, and he had better trainers in his life. And they worked on cardio types of strength training. He probably wasn't lifting any heavy weights, but he was probably lifting something. I mean, there are different ways of training and eating to allow a certain type of performance.
And he's still an elite athlete.
And he also had a set of genes, which I can't contribute, and like he has some innate ability which I won't ever have, and that's okay. But you got and he was obviously in a good environment which supported his skill. Which a lot of people are skilled, but doesn't mean they're going to get the opportunity to blossom. So there are all of these kind of variables around, and it's not just nutrition, but to say, hey, you're going to look different. 10 years. You're going to look different 4 years. You're going to look different 2 years. Like, I found pictures of my, like, the kids who just finished ninth grade when they were in my seventh grade, and I cracked up.
Oh, that's really irritating.
They look so different from grade 7 to 9. They don't look like the same people.
No.
So that's the other piece of knowing nutrition, and you're changing anyway. And keep in mind that as you grow older and things change, your dietary needs will change. I now take supplements for vitamin D because my levels are too low. I mean, I wasn't the case younger.
Yep.
So things do change too, that you can't control, but that's just part of it.
Yeah, and I think like just exposing them to resources and like letting them know that the knowledge is out there and they don't have to rely on just kind of like hearsay or like commercials, advertisements, especially things that are marketed to them on Instagram. Like there's ways, like that's a huge thing now. Like you have a lot of like experts or like gurus on
everything.
Everything, right? Especially on Instagram, where you can watch like short videos or just like clips or watch like look at posts and scroll through them really quickly. So it's a lot of information you can take in a very short amount of time. But like letting like the kids know that those resources are out there for them to like look into like the science behind things and like understand that like how to kind of decipher like what's how to decipher media, right? And like advertising, like what's really going to be beneficial
and
for
that's
me.
That's the problem. But the problem is who you trust.
Fake news.
I mean, if Kim Kardashian gave real legit healthcare information, like great, but she's not. And if they had somebody who you knew was legit and would always give you very real things that people would listen to, it would make sense. And it would be very helpful for young people.
Look at Dr. Oz. Like, my grandmother is obsessed with Dr. Oz.
Well,
you would think that that is her primary care physician.
I get it, but kids are obsessed with Ninja. And they said, oh, Ninja. I don't even know who Ninja is. I just know it's something to do with video games. And I know that my kids. And who's the other? Allier. Like, oh my goodness, it's Allier. Like,
oh, yeah. They love YouTube. They just love, like, YouTube and watching, like, things. Like, I watch YouTube. I'm not guilty. We're just listening to music off YouTube, and like, they watch people do things on YouTube, like play video games instead of playing themselves.
They'd rather watch someone else do.
They'll watch someone else play video games, and it was like the most. I thought it was like a South Park kind of ironic sketch when I saw it first on South Park, and then it's actually the real thing.
It is real, and they love it.
Yep. There'd be times I come in, they have the Nintendo Switch out. I was like, are you playing video games? They're like, no, I'm just watching someone play the game.
Yes.
I'm like, why did you buy the Switch then?
Well, they don't even play themselves. Yes. They buy.
You have this remote gaming system that you can use wirelessly. Why not just use it to play the game? I'd rather watch them play.
That is the boy's equivalent of a purse.
What do you think? So? Oh,
it's an accessory.
Oh, yeah.
That's all it is. I have one. Look.
Yeah.
And the difference is at least a purse is functional.
Yeah, there's no function to that.
I mean, okay, my mother had her keys and her wallet and her purse. Okay, we got her phone. A purse is functional. A Switch is not functional if you're just using it to show it. In that case, it's just an accessory.
A very expensive accessory.
Accessory.
That has to be charged all the time.
Right. Yes, you pay for electricity. That's correct. Yes, sir.
And video games that you might play a couple times after watching them play. Yeah. That was just so mind-blowing to me, because I had asked some of my kids, like, oh, I kind of want to get the Switch, and I was, like, asking about the use for it, and they're like, yeah, you know, we watch YouTube on it, and I was like, yeah, just, you can watch YouTube on your computer, or, like, your phone, like, why did you have a Switch? And, like, it just really didn't make any sense to me how they...
But they're children.
They are children.
And they're still...
Why am I listening to a child? That's all, that's, you know, I've been...
Well, that's because we're around them all day. We're around children more than around adults.
That's 100% true.
So when you're around them all day, that becomes your world, and that becomes normal, and that's a normal conversation in the context of being around young people all day.
Like, don't really just try to take advice from a 12-year-old about purchasing options? Like,
but no, but sometimes they actually do. When it comes to technology, like headphones, like they might actually know a whole lot more about. What headphones, why, and how much, and where to get it. Like, did you know, like, some of these kids make money with sneaker, like, resale?
Yeah, I talked to some of the kids that do that. And it's, I had a kid from my high school who's actually, was into it early, and he's made, like, a lot of money doing it himself. It's really cool to, like, it's really cool to see, because, like, he's really able to like use a platform like social media to like really build it like up his followers and like the people that really do it, and like he has his own business based off that.
It's nuts.
Yeah, it seems nuts, but it's like ingenious if you think about it. If you got into it early, imagine it's like flipping houses. Some of these sneakers are so expensive.
It's so strange to me.
I stopped buying like sneakers back in like expensive sneakers like Jordan stuff. I stopped buying them back in like freshman year of college. 2011, that was.
And if you'd have bought them, you just left them on the shelf.
Yeah, because, like, you don't want to ruin them at that point. And then, like, they became... I always thought they were expensive at that point. And then... Because they were, like, $150 a pair, I think. I was like, well, that's pretty steep. And then, by the time I left college, like, some Jordans were going for, like, $220 a pair.
You could just left...
Exactly,
them.
Just...
It's like a stock.
Yep.
You leave it on the shelf.
It's a physical stock you're holding.
Yeah,
some sneakers they have now, like they released the, if you remember, I was going to say Futurama, Back to the Future.
Yeah.
Those Marty McFly shoes.
Yeah.
They were going on eBay for, they re-released them, Nike re-released a pack, and I think they're called the Air Max, and they were selling for like $75,000. Yeah, just like, wow. It's laudable because it's just like, wow. Like,
and you're never going to wear them.
If you had that much, people probably wear them if you had that much money.
I guess if you're a billionaire.
Yeah, it must be nice to have the...
Well, some people you could also just put it in a plastic case and look at it. I mean, it's like an artwork if it's going to be worth that much.
No, I would not. Because the minute I got something on them, I'd be so mad for the rest of my life. I just spent $75,000 on something that's ruined.
When they said Odell Beckham Jr. bought a $191,000 watch and brought it to the Cleveland Browns facility. So people will spend money on things like that. I'm not that guy. I don't have $191,000, and I certainly won't spend it on a watch.
Right, and then he's looking at his phone for the time. That's why I don't. That's why I personally don't buy watches like that. But
that's like an expensive Switch. It's just an accessory at that point.
Yeah, you're just it's a reason to look cool. But I don't know. I just find that interesting. If you think about how like they consume, and I always think from that mindset, and that's kind of like why I wanted to see if I can not. I don't want to use the word influence in the wrong way, but kind of just like show them or enlighten them in the fact that there's so many resources out there. The way like that we look at education has to be different. Like we can't just keep throwing like these, I don't want to say pedagogical, like curricular terms like science, history, math, English. Mm-hmm. Like we kind of have to think about like what within those kind of pillars have to be like are really resourceful and needed now for like these kids, because it's going to be so different by the time like our sixth graders are going to be in high school. Mm-hmm. And even by the time they're like seniors in high school going to college, like that's what, 7 years from now?
Yeah.
Completely different landscape.
Well, let me ask you this. Is there any way you can kind of supervise them to make the podcast themselves?
Yeah, so I was thinking about doing that as a not an honors next year, a sham. Like doing like a once a week sham where we would all kind of like talk and have these discussions and like see like what their mind is.
That'd
like.
That would be an honor.
That would be an honors, but...
If you're running it, they would have to run it if it's a chant. That's the difference between honors and chant. Honors...
Okay, so whatever, I don't have to write comments for you.
Well, then you want a chant, but they would have to ask you to do it.
Yeah, which would be fine. So I'd say, like, hey, why don't you guys do this? Like, I have a podcast or a platform that we can use.
But I'm even saying for the sixth grade.
Oh, like do like a year-long one?
You can give them one a month. Like,
oh, they, like a almost like a Harkness discussion. We do it in class and we record it.
Yeah.
And we can listen to it and keep yourself. Actually, that'd be pretty cool.
Whereas you give them some prompts as to health things. Or you're on the paleo diet. Tell me what that means. You're on the, you're a vegan. What does that mean? What are the pros and cons? Like any other.
Like a health summit or like some sort of like a conference almost.
And but whatever your topic is for the, like you're covering in the main class,
mm-hmm.
that could be like a block day where you sit there and say, okay, yes, your homework be ready for the block day, and this is kind of how you set it up. And then you might have one a month where every first Thursday, if it's class on Thursday, we're going to have your podcasty kind of topic based upon whatever thing you set up, which kind of overlaps your topic but has a bigger picture application.
They'd
and at
cool.
that point, instead of them looking, and you're the one who'll be able to monitor if this is legit or not, and say, all right, school, we're going to give us a platform where we can post this to the world. Not yours to set up. Unless you still use the same anchor stuff.
Yeah, I probably could.
But as long as the school says, can you even, just like you had the radio broadcast for the basketball, then all of a sudden the kids have their own little kind of station.
Yeah, I guess they can empower their voices.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And in the end, they end up creating the content.
Like that.
And in the end, they've got the power. And you've addressed the concern that you have about them not getting it. They have access to it. And everybody got access to it. And then you can partner with the newspaper, like the middle school paper,
mm-hmm.
and all of a sudden do an article about it.
Yeah, it'd be cool. I was actually thinking about starting a group on campus, like with students kind of focused on like public health concerns or just looking at that lens
yep.
of thinking. So like, to get more people in the field. I mean, we both have a healthcare background.
True.
So we kind of understand, like, what the dynamics of, like, especially the people that we see and, like, kind of how our healthcare systems here is really based in, like, lack of knowledge. So the less people know, the yeah. more profit that we can make in Ooh. Healthcare, because if they knew everything that they were doing, they wouldn't have to come in as often, or, like, they would know how to help themselves in ways that...
Well, but as we talk, food is medicine, too.
Yes.
So all of a sudden you can have kids go into, all right, why would you eat that? Or this is known to be good if you feel this kind of sick, and this kind of food might be known if you're this kind of sick. Now, do you eat it raw or ginger for this? You can put it in tea, you can put it in a certain kind of food, and you can still have the benefit. That could be 1 month's plan. Like you kind of weave the food into the curriculum.
Yep.
I said, okay, be ready. It's like, it's Monday, and we're running Tuesday, I'm going to remind you. Well, again, all of a sudden, it's tomorrow, or it's Thursday, be ready.
Yep.
And then you can invite, and then you have a scorecard, and they can even grade themselves.
Yep, and I think, yeah, they can listen to it again, like we can review and say, hey, what do we talk about? We can say, like, let's listen to it over the next two classes. Here's your, like, critique sheet. You can
yeah.
critique yourself, and you can kind of write comments to yourself about what you improve for the next time.
And that would be, you say you do that once a month.
You're giving yourself a grade. That'd be a great way. I was trying to work in more ways where the kids can like self-grade.
Yeah.
And like,
but the other piece is, when you work with, like some of them might be on the school, middle school paper.
Mm-hmm.
I say, okay, also write about this for the middle school paper. Where it's a feedback loop where they're all constantly interested, and then the content shows up in addition to the process. Those are two different things.
I can even have them, like, oh, that'd be pretty cool. I can, like, work with the people who work in the magazine and say, hey, can we create a science magazine or like a section?
That's my, right. And and that would be a way that you satisfy that information.
Yeah, and they can work on writing and like actual like persuasive thought.
Because I think if you have a room with no lab space, that has so much value where they feel all the way into this thing. And maybe they can give you in front, like a two-pager, where they can have a picture of your class and what some people found. I said, all right, next month, you're going to get the next half of the class is going to have something. And I'm sure they'd be willing to work with you.
Yeah, and I can even contribute too. I have a buddy of mine, his name's Anthony Valentine, Connecticut. Yeah. He has this magazine called Culture Magazine, and he's featured me in one of his sections before. And it's kind of really meant to show, like, to highlight, it's a physical magazine that's meant to highlight, like, especially now for this generation, things that kids can latch onto as culture that they can share. I was listening to this other podcast the other day, and the person was talking about memes and the fact that memes are just, like, kind of cultural things that are across the board that people understand.
Yeah.
They're just reoccurrences of, like, kind of similar things that happen over and over again. So his, kind of the way, if you think about it, if we can create memes or things that are seen over and over again based in health and science, and kind of like have the kids at the school, or at least my class, like push those into the magazine, they can see like a younger voice or generation and be like, oh, they're actually really interested in this, and get people more interested in that way. That'd be actually really cool. You just gave me a good idea.
I think you got this.
I think I was trying to figure out a way to incorporate this kind of like medium into the classroom. Like I was thinking about doing the sham, but I think like the way you kind of framed it with like the constant feedback loop of doing it weekly, monthly, that could be like really empowering for kids to like learn how to just like express their voice in a very like low stakes kind of way.
And I can also say, if you find that some kids are super anxious, you let them work together.
Yep.
It's like, okay, everybody get first.
So you guys have a team of experts if you want to.
And if not, I will pick some of you.
Yep.
And you gotta learn to work together. And if not, that's a good skill too.
Mm-hmm.
Either they totally flop, or you deal with your anxiety and you learn how to work with other people.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot of power in what your objective is. There's a lot of power as a teacher to help them to grow. There's a lot of power in partnering with the school paper, especially the middle school version of the paper, where when it's everywhere you look, the message is going to be, you need to be healthy. And the adult is not the one telling you.
Yep, your classmates, your peers are saying it.
And if you really dig in, you might be able to get some of the zero period teachers, the art teachers, to sit there and say, okay, can you work with me on a health thing? And say, yeah, I can figure out a problem.
Oh, like a health piece of the curriculum?
Yeah, if all of a sudden in my photo, or you get ceramics, or maybe acting dance might be hard, but 2D art might be able to say, okay, we can accommodate that. You know what I mean? Where at least some of the kids who are in the class can reinforce it, bring from art into the science room, and say, okay, I have a problem. I mean, where it's just constant learning.
Yeah, I think, and that's like multidisciplinary as well. Interdisciplinary, because, yeah, I think like as long as they're constantly learning something and like they're challenging themselves, it's just like whether or not you can direct it in a way where it's self-led and like they understand and they're invested in that way.
And ideally, in dream case scenario, advisor would be able to pick up one and have a speaker who's going to talk about a nutritionist from the hospital. Or a mother or a father who works at the hospital who can talk about the power of nutrition.
Like, I have some friends that actually do, they do food circles. I've talked about them before, Eat for Beauty. It's my friend Caleb, Miranda, and Saskia, and they do mindful eating practices or mindful eating workshops.
Yeah.
So, like, they had a potluck, I think, 2 weeks ago or last week. I would make food for it, and then while we were there, we would do kind of, like, just kind of a check-in emotionally to see how everyone's doing, and then before we eat, like, you take your first bite and then you don't take another bite until like you're fully done like chewing and then processing everything and just get all the flavor, all the taste, thinking about maybe where these things came from, like maybe what goes into preparing them, like from the other person's perspective, and it gives you like a real idea of like
Am I eating to satisfy a craving, or am I eating because like this is now the meal that I'm choosing to sit down and actually decompress and put something nourishing into my body for?
That's certainly a higher level. I would never do that with my children.
No.
They have school children.
No, that's way too much. That may be too much to ask for them, but I think at least hearing about it and like having someone bring someone and talk about it.
I think that's different.
I think that could be cool. If I was trying to make them do that,
it's
every
like,
day,
never.
No.
But if somebody talked about it.
Can you imagine those fourth period kids are like, when is class over? When is class over? And then you sit there and say, you can't eat until you're being mindful. You're
you
sitting
get
still.
One bite? Oh, no, man.
That'd be so torturous, but that'd be
oh,
funny.
No way. No.
But, and I think, like, just teaching those soft skills, like, actually, like, just working on some, not even have to, like, do any cutting, like, have everything prepped, but just say, hey, like, these are, like, random things, like, play instead of, like, create in that way, like, look at food as an art and think about the ingredients you use, write them all down.
Yeah.
Can someone recreate this? Is that the scientific element of it? Can't, if you were doing a lab and, like, someone had to recreate this dish that you made?
Yeah.
What are you going to add in it? What do you think will work together? Like, have things be like, these are the sweet things. These are, like, the kind of acidic, like, kind of bitter things. These are the things that are kind of, like, salty and savory. These are, like, your vegetables. And these are your, like, I won't do any, maybe not do any proteins, but say, like, these are things you can use. Like, go ahead and try and make something.
Well, and the next day, you could stick some of the same thing under a microscope. I mean...
Yeah, that's... I think it's such a... I get really excited when I think about it. It's just like putting the class together.
Yeah, a lot of things you can do, and you say, this is still so much fun. You can, I mean, kids play with onions, they're going to go, ooh. And someone's going to try to eat it, and it's like, you can't eat it, and like, yuck. I mean...
Oh, look, let's leave that garlic out for two... Or why can't you put garlic in oil and leave it sitting for like more than 2 weeks?
Or...
Because you can create botulism. Oh, what's botulism? It's a disease.
Or it makes you paralyze your face with Botox. That's the other thing.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
You know Botox?
Yeah, I know Botox.
That's what botulism is.
Really? Oh.
That's why your paralyzed face, why people use it. But it creates paralysis.
Oh, that's right.
That's why that you can't breathe.
That makes sense.
But you could also stick that garlic in the soiling
grub. Botox is like the
it's the botulism toxin.
The trademarked.
Botulism toxin, Botox. That's why you can't breathe, because it paralyzes your, like the, you know, the muscle we call it, actin and myosin.
Yeah.
It paralyzes it. That's why you can't breathe.
Huh. I would never have put two and two of those together.
That's why they shoot you with some, like, Botox in your forehead. It paralyzes.
So it does something different than ingesting it, I'm assuming?
It's just such a small amount.
Oh, okay, because ingested, I think it affects, it's almost like you get like, I think it's like the symptoms of food poisoning somewhere.
Then you want to stop breathing.
That makes sense. Well, don't leave your garlic in oil.
Yeah, I know. No. But the other deal is, you let the garlic, you're eventually it's going to grow.
Yep, exactly.
And all of a sudden you could grow more garlic.
And then you can cut it in half. Oh, like what do the cells look like?
Right.
And they always show like that picture of the onion cell, like cell division, like different phases.
I mean, there's so much you could do with food, and also you end up going on such a high level where it's like, and then you cook it, then all of a sudden the heat does what to the, I mean,
see, that would really be my favorite part, like the teaching the cooking parts and like what to, how to put together a dish, because I think then you move into like the more like functional, like what you can talk about, like muscle memory, like why does a chef work so much faster than the home cook, because they're doing this, they're shaving the same carrots like all the time so they can just move faster. How do your muscles respond to moving that fast?
My only concern would be, we don't really have a kitchen.
Yeah, we have that space.
But there's no stove. There's an oven.
Yeah, but getting portable burners, especially if it's, we'd split, like, how we would do is if we're doing actual cooking demo, split the class into teams, team A, team B. So you have team A, team B, team C, if there's 12 kids, so three teams of four. And then they watch me do it. And they're just going to fall on the steps. And that lab will just really be like, what are the different things going to taste like? We're making the same dish, but we'll add in different elements. It's like you have, like, you're baking the same cookie recipe. One group has extra butter, one group has extra flour, one group has, like, extra baking soda, one group has, like, extra sugar.
Yeah.
What are the differences and results? Like,
what does
that teach you?
And then why? Like, why is it different?
And then, like, you can bring in the cultural aspect and say, like, all right, so why would it be... You know, we're making rice. What is the difference between basmati rice, and why is it so?
So, like, why if you had basmati rice, like, why is that important to do, and bake in a certain way? Why is or bake cook in a certain way? like, why would why do certain cultures use certain foods? And I think, like, that's the most important part that, like, we can kind of reach to the kids and kind of teach them about. So I think, like, focusing in on that kind of aspect of cooking and looking at the science behind it and trying to teach them, I think they'd actually have a pretty good teacher in some in myself in doing the cooking classes and demos, because I really pride myself on, like, kind of thinking about what kind of ingredients I'm using. Are they relative to, like, my culture? Like, what's the context behind them? Like, what am I really going to get from them? I think that's important. We're going to take a short break, and I'm actually going to be right back in a second.